That kind of hurts my feelings that you said evolution is a lie.
I was wondering if you were bringing people up. I couldn't tell.
Oh, was the guest request button not there for you?
No, that's fine. It don't matter.
Oh, well, okay.
I'm here now.
Yep.
I'm here now. What's on your mind?
Yeah, actually, well, usually the guest kind of dictates it, but so you don't believe in evolution. That's not, we don't have to talk about evolution, but I would just ask, what is the evidence you have for any alternative explanation?
Okay, well, I guess let's start with like the main origins. So for the universe to exist, like. Okay, first of all,
just talking about evolution.
Oh, you don't want to talk about that?
That's irrelevant to whether or not evolution is true.
Oh, okay. So that doesn't matter to you. Would origins like of okay, let me ask this then. Not of the universe, but would the origin of like abiogenesis versus biogenesis be acceptable topic or no to you?
Not really, because if because people pretend that either life had to arise completely naturally, for which I think there's overwhelming evidence for, or the biblical account of God miraculously creating all life is the answer. Actually, aliens that are sufficiently technologically advanced could have created the first life forms on Earth. So life would like literally be intelligently designed, but not by God. And it would still be completely naturalistic because the aliens are just part of nature. They're just using technology and they didn't do any voodoo or incantations or anything. So, well, I guess that would basically be it.
Okay, so you wouldn't like to hear my argument why I don't? Yeah, I guess not. But I feel like life on Earth had to be. Can we argue with that abiogenesis for, or biogenesis for life on Earth? Is that acceptable?
Well, normally, that's totally fine, and that's kind of what I do. But what I'm trying to get at here is something slightly different, which is. Pretend I don't know the answer. What evidence do you have for your contrary claim?
Okay, so my contrary claim to abiogenesis, correct?
Yeah.
So when I look into it, right? So basically it has to arise from non-matter. I guess I'll start here. So when things are alive, they are constantly fighting, I guess maybe what we would call entropy, right? But the systems are in place to fight it. And so normally entropy sure. tends to disorder. So the systems are in place to fight it while we're alive. But as soon as we lose the battle, entropy like wins. Like when you die, when an organism dies, I think I've maybe seen it in a microscope when they die. They just like some of these little tiny organisms just like go poop.
Yeah, they pop.
Fall
yeah.
apart. So to me, I don't see. So you want me to believe that things that are in order, when they die and they lose the battle, entropy takes over and it tears it apart. You want me to believe that something came, was able to somehow miraculously go against entropy without being alive, without the systems, to keep it from happening. So it has to come there apart. But when we see the cell, it just goes
yeah,
poop
but,
and it just
falls apart. Yeah, but there are all kinds of things in nature that are not living that fight against entropy. And they do so really successfully.
So you mean like, what do you mean by non-living things?
Sure. So like an example would be like Earth's crust is broken up into pieces and some are growing, they're not really shrinking, but they're colliding. So that like the gaps between things are shrinking. And there are like hydrothermal vents on our planet. So there are all kinds of really cool geological things that do this. And the only reason that's possible is because there's a constant input of energy. Or an even simpler example would be the weather. If the sun disappeared, then Earth would just gradually cool down and there wouldn't be any weather anymore on the planet. All the water on the surface would freeze and air really wouldn't move around hardly ever because there would be no engine, which is the sun, no input of energy to make it dynamic. But because the sun exists, we have a constant source of energy. So there are natural things that do that all the time. And life almost certainly would have just borrowed from that in specific conditions in order to get a jump start. But then life to this day remains entirely dependent on either heat from below the ground in order to sustain the chemical energy for life, or energy from the sun.
Okay, well, what I'll say about, I guess maybe there's two things I can say. One is technically it's in a losing battle, but, and it's slowly dying down, you know what I'm saying? Because that's how the system works, as far as I understand. At least the solar system itself is slowly decaying. Another thing I would like to say is that you're making the assumption that Earth is like, it's like a good thing, what's going on or whatever, because if there was no life, it really wouldn't matter what the Earth was like, whether or not it was a frozen ball or if it was on fire, because that's, because there's all different kinds of planets, you know, if you understand what I'm saying. The only reason it really matters is because life is here, because then other than that, it wouldn't really be a better or worse thing necessarily at all, because that's, I mean,
I'm not talking about good or bad. I'm just stating what the facts about things existing despite entropy working against them. That's all I'm really talking about.
Well, it's existing, but I don't know if that's the type of organization, I guess, isn't really important unless life is here, because I don't even know if it's really organized. It's a ball of things with different things on it. Maybe it's technically organized. I'm not sure, maybe. But you have to understand what I'm saying. So the life is organized in such a way that it can be living, an individual, autonomous little thing going around, which requires it to be able to fight entropy. And I don't know, what is your mechanism? You said something about this. What is the mechanism by which they fight entropy, or entropy is somehow gone over in order to form a complete organism that can survive on its own? Like, what mechanism does that happen? What mechanism is used?
Well, I could give you a really low resolution answer, which is chemistry. We just know that for a fact, that is how organisms ward off entropy. But then I could give you a little bit higher resolution answers, such as like metabolism. Like I could specify it to the kind of chemistry that life really does use in order to do this, which would be like photosynthesis, the Krebs cycle, those kinds of things.
But you're going into what I already said about that they use these systems while they're alive. But I'm saying, what system, what mechanism do they use before? What is used? Because it's not necessarily them.
Sure. So yeah, I would say the Krebs cycle. The Krebs cycle is all life on the planet uses it. It's just when you take carbohydrates and break them apart and create high energy molecules used for the cells to do things with it. And the Krebs cycle exists in nature without cells. And so if you have a metabolic chemical system, then you have a pathway to building the cellular components of the very first life form without even having life. But probably the other thing that should be said about this is what you're asking for isn't going to have a name, because it's really complicated. It's like saying, what's the name for the process that creates a tornado? There isn't one. Like, we know how it happens. We know how the energy from the sun creates the different weather patterns and how cold and warm fronts interact with each other and they cause the air to circulate. Like, we know how it happens. There just isn't a name for it. And the way life would have started on this planet is like people ask for what's the thing or the process or whatever that does it. And it actually won't have an answer like that. unfortunately. But getting away from it, so what I was trying to do is, or what I actually wanted us to do here, and we're not doing that, is I wanted to hear the evidence for the counterclaim, because you're just telling me that abiogenesis didn't happen. It's like, okay, even if it didn't happen, then after more than 1,000 debates, I've compiled all the knowledge you need to debunk the arguments you hear from my guests into a book. Rational Answers to Stupid Questions covers evolution, the Big Bang, creationism, flat earth, and more. Order using the link below, and I will personally sign and ship you a copy today. But misinformation comes in many forms. My other book, Facts That Aren't True, debunks hundreds of false claims ranging from the human body, history, nature, animal facts, and more. I promise you'll find something in here that you've been wrong about for years. Here, for the purpose of this debate, you're saying God did it. I'm going to say aliens did it. So I agree. That's abiogenesis fine. Didn't happen. It was aliens.
That's fine. That is fine.
But it's not fine.
No, because it's still biogenesis, because life created life, if you understand what I'm saying. So if you were to believe that, I would consider that a more likely and acceptable theory, to believe that aliens created life, even a spaghetti monster. It doesn't really matter what it is, because it seems like something had to create life, if you understand what I'm saying.
Why can't chemistry do it?
Like you said something about the Krebs theory, but what I'm saying is I don't see anything that I've been able to find where molecules and all these ribosomes and all these things are forming into like usable chains and forming proteins and all these things in such a way that it becomes a life form. You don't form it because I don't see such a thing happening. Because you gotta have a certain amount of systems going to have a life form. You just have to. You have to be able to have to be able to live and survive. It has to have some sort of metabolism. And this isn't a point that I would like to make. As far as I can see, the only type of organisms out there that could be a living, the first type of organism, would have to be some sort of what's called an autotroph, if I understand correctly. And these type of organisms, they can live, as far as I understand, on their own without another life form. Like, we cannot live without a life form, because we need plants and whatnot to synthesize proteins and stuff for us to have energy. So whatever is going to be the first animal or little organism has to be something like an autotroph, as far as I can understand. That's the only type of animal that we see in nature that could be a candidate. And then the idea of, they have to be like really simple life forms. When we look at these, they have more complex metabolisms than would be like a parasite in our body. Like, some of the smallest organisms on Earth, or the smallest genomes, are like parasites inside like maybe a human body or something. But these autotrophs, they're like, you're talking about the ones that we can find, like as far as I can find, like you're talking about like over a million base pairs when you're talking about their genetic makeup.
Maybe for some bacteria.
No, I'm speaking specifically of autotrophs. Maybe there are.
I know there are autotrophic prokaryotes, like extremophile archaea.
Maybe there's some that I haven't found, and maybe I forgot one or two. You know, but basically they're going to be used something like chemosynthesis or photosynthesis. Yep. Now that to me goes against the. Those are more complex. Metabolisms. So to me, that just makes the idea
more complex than what?
A metabolism inside, let's say, some of these little parasites. I can't remember which one it was, but that has like maybe 500 base pairs, and I think there's maybe one that has even less. But
there aren't any parasites that are going to do that. So there are some bacteria or prokaryotes that can have base pairs that are like around 500,000 or so. But like a parasite is an animal. Animals are multicellular. They're much, much, much more complex than even modern prokaryotes are. And they're certainly more complex than the earliest life form would have been.
No, what I'm trying to say, though, is when I'm looking to find life forms that have low genomes, like, mm-hmm. and are not as complex, a lot of times they're parasites, but the reason being probably...
That's not the case. There are no single cell... I mean, Are there any single-celled parasites? I mean, there's probably something you can get that maybe counts as a parasite. But it would be a eukaryote, whatever it is. I mean, there are bacteria that make us sick, but they're not classified as parasites. But no, the organisms with the simplest genomes are going to be prokaryotes, bacteria and archaea.
Well, yeah, maybe it is actually a bacteria, what I'm thinking about, but it lives inside an organism and cannot survive without, because of the metabolism, it can't synthesize all these things. But when you find animals that are able to that are autotrophs and able to live on their own, wherever it is in the ocean or wherever it is, typically, what I always see, it seems to be a higher amount of base pairs, and they have like photosynthesis or chemosynthesis, which are more, they're more complex than other metabolisms for like an animal that eats like plants or something. I'm not saying that animals that eat plants can't have it, but what I'm saying is, to me, it just seems, for not saying anything against you, ridiculous to think that an animal would just somehow be able to fight entropy before it was even an animal and become that complex and have that complex of a system. Because as far as I'm concerned, unless someone's got a better answer, it's necessary to have chemosynthesis or photosynthesis to survive on Earth if you are the first animal. Because you have to be able to make your own proteins. You have to be able to make your own energy or stuff. I don't understand how it could be any other way. It doesn't make any sense to me. So the idea of the animal being non-complex just really doesn't add up to me.
Oh, okay. First, so there are single cell, like toxoplasma. Okay, yeah. I couldn't think of the word, but protist. They're being parasitic protists isn't surprising to me. I kind of hear what you're saying, but you're leaving out a lot of options because you keep going to animals, but like, yeah, the simplest animal wouldn't have been the first kind of creature to evolve. It would have been something unicellular, like a bacteria or an archaea. We call those prokaryotes. And there are prokaryotes that are autotrophs that have really small genomes, some in the range of like only a quarter of a million base pairs. But even that would be larger than whatever the earliest one is. And because they're chemosynthetic, yeah, that's actually more simple because they're only relying on they don't have to rely on other organisms, because if you have to have organisms to get your energy because everything eats organisms, then I agree there would be a huge problem there. But autotrophs actually are a big boon to a naturalistic origin of life, because they just get their energy from the environment and nothing else.
But what I'm saying is they go against the idea, like 500,000 base pairs is big, okay? That's not small.
But that's a modern organism. It's a simple organism, but it's a modern organism. Billions of years ago, there's no reason to think that it would have been as large as what we see today.
But the thing is, that as far as I'm concerned, it needs to be some sort of autotroph, and they all, as far as I can figure out, I don't know of any other way it'd be possible. It needs to be able to do chemosynthesis or photosynthesis, and that is a more complex.
Chemosynthesis is not more complex than being a consumer. You're comparing, we say producer, consumer, or autotroph, heterotroph. An autotrophic metabolism is not more complex than one that relies on cellular respiration. I mean, they both technically have cellular respiration in a way, but well, actually, the sulfur consuming ones maybe don't.
But the thing is, if you're consuming foods that means you don't have to, like, you don't have to make your own proteins necessarily, or your own stuff. That means you're using it from another organism. That means you can be less complex. You know what I'm saying? Like, a factory that only makes one thing in-house doesn't need to be as complex as a factory that makes everything in-house, if you understand what I'm saying.
That's an argument for autotrophs being simpler, because they just do one thing. Like, plants make all the amino acids that they need. We have to get them from our diet because we can't make them. But again, plants and animals are multicellular. You should be thinking only of unicellular prokaryotes. Because whatever first evolved on this planet would be closer to that, certainly, than any eukaryotic organism.
No, but like, when you have to... So something that is entirely just doesn't, if something doesn't make its own stuff, it can just take the stuff from other people. But the thing is, if no one's making stuff for you, you still need sugar. You still need to be able to build RNA and DNA and stuff like that to have offspring and whatnot. And like, what is it? Viruses, they don't have anything. They have nothing when it comes to be able to make different things. And they're pretty simple little things. I'm sure there can be more or less, but they use other cells to, replicate each other.
Yeah. Well, they use other. Yeah. The only thing they require, though, is either DNA or RNA to do that. It just so happens that living cells kind of are bogarting all of that. There are scientists that think that viruses were the first thing that you could kind of consider a lot. Like, we could have had replicating viruses before we had living organisms on our planet. There's really no issue with that. It's just extremely difficult to prove. But
they use the cellular machinery of other animals, host animals.
Yes, today that's what they do. Yeah, because that's where all the DNA is. That's they need to use their DNA in conjunction with other DNA, or sometimes RNA, to make more copies of themselves. And today that's done by hijacking cells, because the cells are bogarting the DNA. But originally this could have been different.
They use the cellular machinery of the host, though. They have to use, like, the ribosomes and whatnot. That. RNA chains, don't they?
Yes, I know that. But that doesn't mean that that's how it would have happened necessarily in the past.
Well, then what is the mechanism by which it would happen?
Well, I don't know very much about what's called the the viral, or I don't know what they call it, virus first origin of life or something like that. I don't know very much chemically about it, but there are also some more complex viruses that kind of have a metabolism to them. So maybe viruses might actually just be a product of organisms reducing so simply that they just became something that's not technically alive, but capable of self-perpetuation. But
I have thought of that for myself, believe it or not. See, we're both geniuses, damn it.
Yes, something like that.
But the thing is, you still need to be able to replicate. And as far as I understand, you need that cellular machinery to synthesize the chains. If you understand what I'm having,
But DNA needs a metabolism in order to make more DNA, and so for an origin of life, we can have the chemical system, like a Krebs cycle or whatever. We can have a chemical metabolic pathway that builds DNA and other components that living cells today have, and so that can come first. And slowly it builds organisms in a completely, like, from an inorganic way to an organic way.
So what do you say? You say the Krebs cycle. How's that spelled? Is it C-R-E-B?
K-R-E-B-S. Krebs cycle.
It almost sounds like a German word. Krebs.
It might be. It's named after the last name of the guy who discovered it. So. There was a lot of science going on in the early 20th century in Germany, a lot of extremely sophisticated science, which then turned into a lot of really horrible science.
I think crabs in German, because I was in there a while. I think it has to do with crabs and also some sort of STI, I'm thinking, maybe.
Hopefully that's crab not people, crab people.
So I guess, yeah, so the Krebs cycle, and you said there's metabolic pathways, but as I understand, metabolic pathways exist inside living organisms. So what kind of...
Yes, but they also... They exist outside organisms too, because we see the Krebs cycle exist in nature apart from living things.
Okay.
So that means, like, in your cells take sugar, and through the Krebs cycle, they break it down and they use it. Sorry, I got a meme stuck in my head when I said that, but they break it down. And then that creates high energy electron carrier molecules whose energy can then be used to do anabolic reactions that build things. And so that can create the cellular machinery as a precursor or cellular components, like whatever. And then it can be captured by a phospholipid layer that we know happens organically, well, inorganically, actually, naturally as well. And so there can be a metabolic pathway to life rather than, because people always imagine, well, you have to have the DNA with the cell and everything, because that's the instructions to do all this stuff. It's like, in living organisms, yes. But if we're talking about where do living organisms come from, the metabolism first hypothesis explains how you get the DNA and quite a lot of other things as well. So it can... Like, the problem is basically reverse engineered, essentially.
Okay, well, when you're talking about things like DNA and RNA, they are copied basically from, like, if I understand correctly, from DNA and maybe also RNA. But the thing is, if when you get the first one, like, that's going to be a totally random process. And the funny thing is,
sure,
when that totally random process happens, it has to be totally random that at the same time it forms a process to replicate that same DNA, and it has to happen in the same exact place. And it has to all, everything has to happen in such a way that it can reproduce and copy for this to be possible. When you're talking
sure.
About-
a single drop of water can have literally trillions of chemical reactions happening in it every few seconds. So a single drop of water, that many every few seconds. So what happens when you have more than a drop of water, but an ocean of, now it would only be able to happen in select places in the oceans, but let's say we multiply a drop of water by, I mean, for fuck's sake, quintillions or more in volume, and extend the time to many tens of millions of years, the idea that something that is conducive for perpetual replication, which is what a living thing has to do, the idea that that could come about is just, it's not logically impossible at all.
But you're still fighting entropy this whole time. So that's, when things,
yeah, because the system has that as a feature. It is constantly supplied with energy. In this case, we're talking about like near a hydrothermal vent. There is a constant supply of energy that allows for this to happen.
But when you're talking about energy, like, it, as far as I understand, a lot of times energy is a disruptor. It doesn't necessarily make everything go nicely, because you're still talking about entropy. Like when you, if I was to add energy to any system, like let's just say a box of Legos, if I put energy in that system, it's not going to create order. If I put
it 100% will, actually, you can absolutely demonstrate this. Take a jar full of dice or take a jar full of marbles and shake it in a completely random way. The dice will naturally all, I promise you, they will all line up, not like so that you get all ones on one side or whatever, but they will completely line up into the lowest entropy state. And if you do it with marbles, they will line up in that pattern where it's like, I don't know how to demonstrate it, but like the most efficient way to sort cannonballs or whatever, where you have, it'll form a pyramid, right? Where you have two and then one in between them and then another one and another one in between them. Like I'm trying to model it with my fingers. I think you know what I mean. They're staggered. That absolutely will happen, actually. And chemistry is all about minimizing entropy as well. It borrows energy in order to do that. And life literally does the exact same thing, too. There are all kinds of things we see in life where when you dig into it, what it's doing is just minimizing its entropy, or at least doing something in the most energy conservative way.
Yeah, but you understand something. You're talking about things that are the same shape. So you're talking about the same geometry. So when you cut the die, like there is from a it's a geometric thing at this point. When you're talking about random particles floating around, they're not going to have a uniform shape that's going to geometrically cause them to go onto one side.
Yes, I know that. That's not what life does. But the point is, if you add energy to something, you absolutely will get certain types of patterns out of it. Or like, I don't know, like a thing. The reason I invoked that is because you said if I took a random box of Legos, I couldn't create order out of it. No, you actually like literally can with that. And again, we're talking about things that are so incredibly small that the number of them is just unthinkable, and huge amounts of time. We've been going for 31 minutes. There's another guest that I want to talk to because I only have about 45. No, not even that. I only have about 30 minutes available of time for today. So I'll let you go. We'll have to end it there. This video and all my videos is on my Patreon ad-free, and you can get a free copy of my first book by being a member too. Plus, your name will appear in the end credits. Thank you.